Shalom Aleichem, everyone. We are again happy to have Rabbi Mordechai Willig, Shlita Rebbe, is with us to answer our shilas. This is shilas number 32. Please, Rebbe, begin. Thank you.
5 years ago, in the strictest of confidence, a congregant shared with my Rebbetzin and her husband, Mr. X, had been arrested for soliciting a prostitute. She had decided to stay in the marriage. They went for counseling and have moved out of the community and are still together. My wife shared this situation with me years ago, and being that Mr. X was not involved in any capacity in shul work, I kept it to myself. At a recent simcha, I met the Rav of the new congregation. He shared with me, as part of the conversation, that Mr. X is heading the youth department, is doing a great job. What is my responsibility in this situation? Am I allowed to tell the rabbi what was told to my wife in confidence? A very difficult question. On the one hand, Chazal put it, Shema Osa Tshuva. Maybe he made one mistake years ago. He went for counseling. He got all better. On the other hand, maybe he didn't do tshuva. The very serious chashash of inappropriate conduct with respect to the young ladies of the youth department. So there are a number of possibilities. One, to be quiet. But chas v'shalom, you might be in violation of lo sama adam reyecha, of victims which you could have prevented. Number two, tell the whole truth, which has two problems. Number one, maybe destroying the life of a real Baal Tshuva. And number two, you're also revealing secret information. So these two are not really good options. There are two options which I believe should be considered. One, the Rebbetzin, who was given that confidence, should call up Mrs. X in confidence, and to say, you know, I just found out that your husband is involved in the youth department at shul, based on what you told me so many years ago. What do you say? She may say, yeah, it's a big problem, you should really get him off. Or she may say, no, he's a tshuva shalema, and the problem doesn't exist at all whatsoever. And follow what she says. Second possibility, instead of woman to woman, rabbi to rabbi, speak to the rabbi of the new community. Tell him there was some kind of a story in the past. I don't know exactly the details. Just be very careful to make sure that he is, you know, tightly supervised. Perhaps it's better if he focuses on the young men in the youth department, get someone else for the young ladies. Which of those two options is better? Of course, depends upon the personalities, depends upon the situation. One of those two should be followed. Question two. Our Avada Kashrus wants to plan ahead for the inevitable question. The largest conservative temple just approved the same-gender marriages. Their kitchen is under our hashgacha. Sometimes our name is not on the event for a variety of reasons. What should we do when they ask us to do hashgacha at such an event? We have never refused to do hashgacha in the past. The truth is many of the weddings probably were not halachic, as the chosn or kala may could easily be not halakhically Jewish. We certainly never checked to see if the kala went to the mikveh. However, we feel that this may be much worse, as it is very public. Are we allowed to do the hashgacha for this event? Should we be afraid that they may bring us to court for discrimination? From the brief put out by the OU, it sounds there's a possibility. Here's the answer. It begins by saying that the kitchen is under our hashgacha. We know that there are two kinds of events that Mashkichim and Kashrus agencies, Vada Kashrus, handle. One, so we call a drop-off. That means that either the caterer will deliver food in the drop-off, or the customer will come to the restaurant or commissary to pick it up. And the customer takes care of everything else. He hires waiters, he gets plates and spoons and everything. That's one kind of deal. A second deal is what we call today catering, where the caterer himself arranges the waiters and the spoons and the forks and other things. I believe that's the critical difference. If we're talking about a catering event, then is a much higher level of responsibility imposed upon the supervising agency. All halacha should be kept, not just a question of same-gender marriages. In other words, they should not be involved in intermarriages. They shouldn't be involved in Chilul Shabbos if they play music or things of this nature. You don't give hashgacha in those kind of situations. That being the case, perhaps the idea of discrimination would not necessarily rear its head because it's not discrimination against same gender. We don't give supervision to different gender marriages if it doesn't meet our standard, or even bar mitzvahs if it doesn't meet our Shemira Shabbos standard. Of course, you should ask a lawyer about this. So that I would not do. On the other hand, to just give them kosher food, that's okay. It's like a drop-off. So again, the kitchen is under a hashgacha, and they'll use your kitchen, but you, the name is not on the event for a reason, because you're not accepting supervision. They can even be doing it if it takes, you know, some of these places on Shabbos, they don't do Shabbos properly. So also, they're not doing the event is not a proper event. It's not your business. You're just providing kosher food. That's all. That would be okay. But to actually have your name on it because you're arranging everything, and your company under your hashgacha is arranging the waiters and the spoons and the knives and the, that I believe should not be done. Question 3. A couple is going on vacation to a country where purchasing and smoking marijuana is legal. The husband asked me if it's mutter to smoke recreational marijuana. The answer is absolutely not. What's also for us does not depend upon what the government says. What's wrong with smoking marijuana? There are much as a chiv about it. Others talk about it at length. Number one, a person can be a little bit not clear. It can cause sinful behavior. Even, unfortunately, immorality, znus. It could also prevent the fulfillment of mitzvahs. The person is not thinking clearly. Especially since there are many who report that marijuana can be addictive. And furthermore, can be a gateway drug to even more serious types of drugs. So for all these reasons, marijuana is also to use, irrespective of the state law. Question 4. A package was taken for a neighbor to Eretz Yisrael. The neighbor says that there is a bracelet inside for a Hanukkah gift for the daughter-in-law. The package was put in the luggage under the plane, and when they arrived in Israel and opened the suitcase, the package was not there. Are the travelers responsible for the loss of the bracelet? Based on the scenario, if someone is doing a favor by taking something for someone, must there be a verbal or written understanding of not being achrai for the loss? Everyone learned this in elementary school. Ashom Mechinim is chayiv only in pshia, negligence. If the person who owned the bracelet did not tell you explicitly, don't you dare put it in the suitcase, which goes under the plane, they understood that's what's going to be done. You give somebody a package, he puts it in a suitcase. Therefore, the person is a Shom Mechinim, there's no pshia, and he's potter. Question 5. Interacting with non-Jews during the holiday season, quote, can you exchange greetings? If you look in the Ramah and Yoredei Siman Kuf Mem Ches Sif Yud Beis, there are certain leniencies which are based upon a concept known as Eva. We don't want to get involved in hateful relationships with our non-Jewish associates and neighbors. But it says, a bal nefesh yirchak m'nismoach imoim m'mefshebeli Eva. So if you're going to all avoid, in any way avoid it, it should be avoided. Therefore, a Jewish person should not initiate, quote-unquote, greetings for the holiday season. You know, happy holidays, things like that. You should not initiate such a greeting. If the non-Jew tells you happy holiday, if it's possible to say thank you, if that suffices, say thank you. If it's impossible, ne'eva, then you can say, you know, as little as you can, happy to you too. You know, just whatever little phrase can be used, whatever is the minimum which is necessary to avoid the aforementioned Eva. B, a Jewish person owns an apartment complex which is mostly inhabited by non-Jews. May he, meaning the Jewish person, place a decorative tree in the lobby and there are other, quote, holiday decorations? Absolutely not. However, if the super does it, and he's a non-Jew, I do not believe that the landlord is required to make a stink about it, to protest it. Again, it could lead to Ava with the super, with other dwellers of the apartment building as well. C, participating in Secret Santa, a Western tradition which members of a group community are randomly assigned to a person to whom they anonymously give a gift, and other, quote, holiday events in the workplace, as we said before, should absolutely try to avoid this. If it's absolutely impossible to avoid, perhaps the heter of Ava may apply. D, when Hanukkah coincides with December 25th, are any considerations with regard to Hanukkah parties? Obviously, it's mutter for the sake of Hanukkah. We're not going to ask for a Hanukkah party because it happens to fall on December 25th. But it should be clear, it's for the sake of Hanukkah and for nothing else. Six, can you hire a non-Jew to drive you on a bike with a carriage in the back of, on Shabbos? I think it's prohibited. We assume that riding a bicycle is not considered proper covered Shabbos, aside from any other prohibitions which may exist, shemi attacking, things of this nature. The paradigm, of course, is riding on a horse, which is called a zilzul in Shabbos. And if you look carefully, it's prohibited even in certain situations where we allow rabbinic violations, such as in order to help bury a mace on Yontif. Look at Mishnah Brura. Siman Tov Kuf Chavav Sivkot Lamed Zayin and the Sharatzian and the Sivkot Nun. He calls riding a horse Zilusa V'chutzpah Tuva. It's a degradation and an audacity should not be done on Shabbos or on Yontif. And there he says that a Sfina, a boat, is like a sus, is like a horse. It's true. If you look in the Dirshu there, footnote 38, they quote the Har Tzvi, Yerodei Reish Tzadik Gimel, says that a car driven by a goy is more lenient because when it comes to riding a horse, one of the reasons to prohibit is you may pull a branch off a tree to whip the horse. Doesn't apply here. And on a boat, they made a gzera of it may make a raft, which presumably does not apply here either. And therefore, Rav Tzvi Pesach is matirit for the purposes of a mace. What does that mean? Eino zilzul kol kach, he says in Har Tzvi. So it's not that much of a zilzul, but it is a zilzul. For a mace, it's okay, but not for an otherwise any kind of other situation. It seems to me that a bicycle is not quite as severe if it goes down in levels from a horse to a car to a bike, but still considered to be a zilzul in Shabbos. Maybe we might call it a chutzpah because it's not considered to be proper to do such a thing. So, and of course, a tzara gadol ma'od, maybe a doctor has to go on a bike or something like this rather than go on by car. He's going to rush to get there. A bike will suffice. That's one thing. But for a plain individual without such a compelling need to go on a bike would not be proper, not if you drive the bike, ride the bike yourself, nor if a non-Jew drives you in the bike, because the zilzul in Shabbos exists even if a non-Jew is driving the bike. Seven, can a person go on a cruise that is leaving at 3 p.m. on Friday afternoon? If you look in Siman Reish Mem Ches Sif Aleph, it's prohibited to go on a cruise unless it's for a mitzvah. The word cruise to me does not sound like much of a mitzvah. What's the reason? Many reasons are given. One is bitlonik Shabbos, that, you know, it's people get seasick. Now, some of these cruises on the Queen Elizabeth, maybe it's so big that there's no seasickness. I've never had this experience, but it's something to be considered. Or, we mentioned earlier, Shema Yasa Chavah Shel Shayotim. They made a low plug zera. You can't go on any means of boat transportation unless you make a raft. Or we're afraid that a guy is going to do work for you on Shabbos because of the potential danger. These reasons seem to apply to all cruises, and therefore, unless it's for a dvar mitzvah, I wouldn't do it. Eight, what will render a sefer Torah puzzle during laning? For example, if the leg of the hay is almost entirely erased, but there is still black ink. The Shulchan Aruch and Siman Lamed Beis Siftas Vav seems to say that the left leg of a hay is very, very small. When I say the leg, I assume they mean the left leg. Then we can be more make according to the Mechaber. If the right leg, then not. The Ramah writes that even the left leg has a certain shear. It's a shear what's called an os ketana. What does an os ketana mean? So some say it means an os ketana, the yud, of this particular Sefer Torah, which depends how big it is. The Chazon Ish says no, even in Siman Zion. So now for yud ketana, in any Sefer Torah, you don't need to be as big as you in that particular size Sefer Torah. So in that particular case, there's room to be lenient, according to his understanding. 9. My shul has a mix of Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. The shul is small and getting smaller every year. The only potential candidates in the neighborhood are Sfaradik. A. Is there any way of adapting some of their menhagim, specifically Birchas Kohanim? Ashkenazim have a strong custom for hundreds of years not to do Birchas Kohanim except for Yom Tov. It's found in the Ramah. It goes back to even earlier sources. I don't believe you can make such changes just like this. What should be done is establish a separate Sephardic minyan. These minyanim exist in many shuls. Many shuls have Sephardic minyanim. I know of quite a few. I know one certainly in Florida. I know of one in New Jersey, one in New York. They have a Sephardic minyan. These Sephardic minyanim, even though they may be under the same roof as an Ashkenazi minyan, they have their own autonomy, and they're entitled to duchen on a daily basis, because that's minig svard, and their minig is minig svard. Since their minig is minig svard, they can duchen every day. The Ashkenazi minyan should continue to exist without duchening every day, so that's minig Ashkenaz. I understand from the question, it's small and getting smaller every year, that the possibility exists that the Ashkenazim will no longer have a minyan. If that in fact takes place, they will close the Ashkenazi minyan, they will merge into the Sfaradi minyan, and then that Sfaradi minyan can of course continue to do Birchas Kohanim on a daily basis, because the founders of the minyan and the majority of the minyan are Sfaradim. So again, in the present form, keep things the way they are. However, the possibility exists of starting a new minyan right now in a separate room, which is a Sephardic shul. There they will duchen. Keep the Ashkenazi minyan going as long as you can. And if it closes, they can join the Sephardim. Now, I'm assuming that at the present time at least, there's at least 10 Ashkenazim and 10 Sephardim. There are many different permutations, but I'm discussing the way I understand the question. Question B, how do we explain to Balabatim that we cannot adapt Minig HaGra of Eretz Yisrael to America? It's very simple. We don't change Minhagim. As great as the Gra was, we try very hard not to change our present Minhagim. If you look in the Ramah, in Siman Tov Reish Yud Tesef Aleph, he writes, in the context of Yom Kippur, we don't change Minhagim. He refers it to the Maril. The Maril has a very frightening story. In Hilchos Yom Kippur, he says that he was in Regensburg, and since he knew that the great Rishon, Rabbi Ephraim Regensburg, was from Regensburg, he decided to say a certain piyut, which he knew was written by the famous Rabbi Ephraim of Regensburg. The people in the town told him, "Our dear Rabbi Maril, we don't do that over here, even though it's Regensburg." But he felt the honor of Rabbi Ephraim of Regensburg was so great, he felt compelled to change the existing custom when he was there and to do a piyut, which was written by Rabbi Ephraim of Regensburg. Unfortunately, the Maril lost a daughter. And believe it or not, he attributed the loss of his daughter to the fact that he changed his minig and went against the minig in Regensburg, even though he was doing it in honor of Rabbi Ephraim of Regensburg. That's pretty frightening stuff. We try not to change Minhagim. I'll tell you a personal story. when I came to my shul way a long time ago. So I was used to the custom where I was, here in the yeshiva, I davened in YU when I was living in the Heights. And this was the Minigan Eretz Yisrael when I was in, everywhere I was there. It was the Minigan the Shtibel as well. But you don't make Kiddush Friday night. Yes, it's true, there are more courts accustomed to make Kiddush Friday night, but not so easy to defend given the present circumstances. So I told the Balabatim, maybe we should consider stopping the Minig which existed in this Young Israel shul, which exists in many Young Israels, to make Kiddush Friday night. I was very young, and the Balabatim was someone else, said, Rabbi, here we do not change Minhogim. And of course, all I had to do was look at the Maril to know that we try very, very hard not to change Minhogim. Now, maybe there's so much of Minig Betos, but we don't consider the Minig not to Duchen as a Minig Betos. There's a famous story, I don't know how true it is, that the Vilna Gaon decided he can't take it anymore. He gave a bang on the table. Tomorrow we're starting to Duchen, even during on a regular weekday. Story goes that the shul burned down that night. That pretty put him in a bad place. A few years passed, he said, I'm going to do it again. And the shul burned down again. And then he stopped. So the story goes that somebody has to grow. But Lo Bashamayimi, why are you taking into account the signs of heaven that we shouldn't be duchening? So the Gra is supposed to have answered, no, I don't accept it. I just don't want the shul to burn down a third time. So in any event, that's just an example of how difficult it is to change Minhagim. Even if the Vilna Gaon, who's as great as Gadol Hadar, and he even wanted to do it in his own shul, don't jump to change Minhag. Question C. How do we explain that in Eretz Yisrael there are some shuls that have Shachris and Musaf with different Nuschos? I don't know how to explain that, frankly. I don't see how it's possible. Unless somehow it was established that way, some kind of a compromise. I don't think we can derive from this unique situation. And beside the point, who says that it's a proper minig what's going on in Eretz Yisrael? In order to be a proper minig, it has to be a minig shenisyaset al pi chacham, based on his honest to goodness Talmud chacham. Otherwise, as Rabbeinu Tam said famously, you run the risk of a minig backwards. It spells gimel, nu, gimel, hey, nun, mem, and what that means. So not every minig is kodesh kadosh. Finally, D, can we mevatel the Beis HaKnesses and start a new one with alternating weeks of Sephardic Ashkenazi customs? As I said before, no, that cannot be done. I don't think it's possible to mevatel anything. I don't think it's possible to alternate from one week to the other. But as we said before, if the Ashkenazim will peter out and will be left only with a significant amount of Sephardim who can make up their own minion, then their minion should be established now. And if the Ashkenazim will no longer have a minion, Sephardim will become a totally Sephardim minion. I'm done.
Rebbe, thank you very much. We hope we can call upon you as after Chanukah. After Chanukah to everyone. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.